This is Ozarks at Large for Wednesday, January 26th, 2011. I'm Antoinette Grajeda. Later on the program, what's being dubbed by some as the world's tiniest Walmart opens up on the University of Arkansas campus in Fayetteville. Also, being able to write as well as shoot and edit video for the web is becoming a necessary tool for today's journalists to have in their arsenal. The Northwest Arkansas chapter of the Society of Professional Journalists hosted the inaugural Skill Swap Conference, which was attended by professionals who wanted to learn how to communicate more effectively online. Those stories and more are coming up on this edition of Ozarks, but first, this morning, two departments on the University of Arkansas campus have a bit more financial support to create new programs that take advantage of new technology. The Verizon Foundation made a donation to the programs, and Ozarks at Large's Kyle Kellums was there and has this report.
Just a few minutes after 10 o'clock this morning, University of Arkansas students, faculty, and administrators gathered in front of the Verizon Ballroom, freshly adorned with a new sign, to receive a contribution from the Verizon Foundation. University of Arkansas Chancellor David Gearhart opened the press conference.
The Verizon Foundation is making a gift of more than $84,000 to the J. William Fulbright College of Arts and Sciences.
A major part of the donation will be used to help fund a project under the direction of three University of Arkansas psychology professors to create software to educate 9th and 10th grade girls about domestic violence and dating violence. Professor Jim Lampinen, along with colleagues Tim Cavell and Anna Bridges, is working on the concept.
One of the things we talked about in developing the project is going where the students are, and certainly nowadays that's on the internet or through social media.
The dean of the Fulbright College of Arts and Sciences, Bill Schwab, praised the work being done by the psychology professors and told the audience the goal is to develop software that young girls and boys will seek out on their own to learn more about dating and domestic violence. Professor Lampinen says part of today's Verizon gift will help those working on the project figure out just how to do that.
Part of what the Verizon Foundation gift is supporting are a set of focus groups we're doing with teenage girls, their parents, and educators to try to get an idea from them about what this program should look like. So those are starting next week.
David Russell, Verizon's president of external affairs and an alum of the University of Arkansas, says it makes sense for a leading telecommunications company to help develop software and eventually a smartphone application to combat one of society's larger problems.
Now, this is an effort to develop a cutting-edge dating violence prevention program addressing the needs and risks of teenage girls at the start of their high school years prior to their exposure to more extensive dating experiences. This program will be designed to be delivered through various technologies. Smartphone applications, for example. I mean, think of the age group that we're dealing with. So smartphone applications, very big with that age group. Social media, delivery methods, things like that, that are very appealing to young people at that age. And then we're going to study the effectiveness of those methods to see how effective they are in resonating with young women. I'm not aware of any other type of program like this in the United States, and we hope this one can have some legs on it and be adaptable for use in other jurisdictions.
David Russell says the smaller component of the $84,000 grant will be directed toward the University of Arkansas's Lemke Journalism Department. Russell, a former journalist and newspaper editor in Arkansas, says he knows the quickly evolving technical landscape is providing a challenge to journalists and journalism instructors. Today's gift to the University of Arkansas Journalism Department will help underwrite the cost of updating the newsroom used by students.
My first trip to the university over 40 years ago, this building didn't exist, it was built when I was in school, was as an incoming freshman on a journalism scholarship. Back then, we faced a similar challenge, technological innovation. Computers were replacing typewriters, if you can imagine. And the production of the newspaper was changing from hot type, which was literally smearing ink on metal and mashing it to the paper to print the paper, which hasn't changed much since Gutenberg invented movable type, to cold type, which actually produced a photographic image of the text that you could then cut and paste, and again using photography to print the paper.
Gerald Jordan, an associate professor of journalism at the university, says those same sorts of challenges do face journalism students in 2011, just as they did for David Russell in the early 1960s. But the changes are happening even more quickly now.
The impact of the internet and the World Wide Web has been so overwhelming that what we're doing today is vastly different from what we did in 1995 when I started here. I mean, we've gone from cell phones being a luxury for those who could afford it to they're being required at some programs, like University of Missouri requires iPhones, to there being a workaday tool for reporters to get stories. I mean, you can take a smartphone and pretty well put together a whole multimedia package, and that is just amazing.
There used to be certain disciplines. You were a print journalism major, you were a broadcast journalism major. It sounds like with newsrooms today, that really is a pretty vague separation.
Well, depending on the size of the news organization, obviously if you're working for a very small news organization, you're going to be called on to do a variety of things. And, you know, we try to give our students the experience that will allow them to work in that environment. Again, the story matters, to borrow from AMC, and the way you go about getting it is changing, but getting the story is still paramount. So the print students have to know how to use video, how to properly get audio, and the broadcast students have to know how to tell stories, how to report stories. And the advertising public relations students have to know what constitutes a story.
The gifts for the two projects in the Fulbright College of Arts and Sciences at the university are doubly important, Chancellor David Gearhart says, in a time when state funding for public higher education will be tight in Arkansas and almost every other state.
I have to tell you that if we didn't have private philanthropy, we'd be in pretty bad shape. It is really what has kept this university thriving and alive and vibrant. And we appreciate your recognition of that and your generous support.
University of Arkansas Chancellor David Gearhart speaking this morning at a press conference to announce an $84,000 gift to the University of Arkansas from the Verizon Foundation. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Kyle Kellums.
To hear more from Gerald Jordan about the challenges in teaching journalism students in an era of Twitter, blogs, and more, you can go to our website at ozarksatlarge.com. Arkansans who want the state to resist President Obama's health care law were dealt a blow yesterday. FM 89's Kelly McNeil reports.
A bill to forbid the federal government from requiring anyone to buy health insurance was defeated in the House Health Committee by a vote of 12-7. Gene Block of the State Attorney General's office testified that the bill would almost certainly be challenged in court because normally state law can't supersede federal statute.
Barring the reversal of long-standing legal precedent, the outcome of any litigation is virtually guaranteed to be unsuccessful for the state of Arkansas. Putting the state in this position would be ill-advised.
The committee room Tuesday was overflowing, mostly with supporters of the bill. Its sponsor, Republican Representative David Meeks, says he'll see what other options he has for pressing the issue.
I really thought that when presenting the evidence that the members of the committee would vote to protect the citizens of Arkansas from the federal government and that they would pass this out of committee.
The governor and attorney general, both Democrats, have already declined to attempt to overturn the health care law by suing the federal government.
That report was filed by Kelly McNeil. This is Ozarks at Large. Books tell stories that have the ability to inform as well as entertain readers. Books can also help connect people to others in their community. The annual University of Arkansas One Book, One Community project is designed to foster intellectual conversations among people throughout the community. Now in its third year, the project invites students and local residents to all read the same book and then participate in discussions and other related activities, as well as have the opportunity to meet and hear from the author. David Jolliffe, co-chairman of the One Book, One Community Committee, says the project can help connect students not only to their peers on campus, but also to others living in the Northwest Arkansas community.
I certainly know this is true on university campuses. I did this at my previous institution, DePaul, and then I've done it here at the University of Arkansas. And there's a real benefit on campus having, you know, a great many students having read the same book. On the campus level, you know, that means that the conversations between and among students can, you know, range beyond where are you from, what are you going to major in, what are you going to pledge. Have you read this book? There's a chance for them to have a kind of a common intellectual conversation. And I think the same idea extends to the community as well. For example, my wife last fall was sitting in a bookstore reading The Immortal Life of Henrietta Lacks, which was our selection for last fall, and a young University of Arkansas student whom she didn't know walked up to her and said, "Are you reading that book?" And my wife said, "Well, yes, I am." She says, "Well, I am too. What do you think about it?" And suddenly there was this conversation about the book and about the issues in it going on between a student whom my wife had never met before and my wife. And it produces a substantial opportunity for good, strong intellectual conversations in the whole community.
The previous two title selections were Luis Urrea's The Devil's Highway and Rebecca Skloot's The Immortal Life of Henrietta Lacks. In the past, the public was allowed to suggest any book for the project. This year, local residents may still suggest titles, but the books must fit the theme of creating and living in a sustainable world.
We're always looking for new ways to do two things. First of all, is to generate a wider range of what we call ancillary events, related events. When we have the Common Reading Program in the fall, we always try to surround it with panel discussions about the issues that are in place. We had performances of short plays about the issue this year. We're looking to maybe build in art plays, more student conversations, perhaps blogging of some sort or another. And we're also trying to be more thematically focused, I think, as we go forward this year. In the past 2 years, we've simply chosen the book that the committee recommended. This year, we've had discussions in advance with folks about what sort of issues or themes or topics they thought would be relevant for the book. And then we decided we would move forward with this theme of creating and living in a sustainable world and then have folks suggest books to us that would flesh out that theme. So we're kind of adding one more layer of public discussion in the selection process.
Other criteria for a suggested book is it must be nonfiction, no longer than about 300 pages, and it must have been written by a living author. Nominations should be submitted by February 18th. The book that will be used in this year's project will be selected by a steering committee, which is comprised of UA faculty members and students, as well as staff members of Mullins Library and the Fayetteville Public Library.
The committee is a very large committee. It's probably around 25 people. And what we do is we take all of the books that are suggested and we basically dole out the titles to the people on the committee. And the people in the committee will read every book that is suggested that meets the minimal qualifications. In the press release, there are the criteria that the book has to meet. The most important one, the book does need to be nonfiction. The major users in this whole thing are the students who are in the first composition course at the University of Arkansas. And in that course, they do not read fiction. They read only nonfiction prose and write about it. So the book does need to be nonfiction. So what we'll do is we'll take a look at all of the books that are recommended that meet our criteria. We'll dole out those books among the members of the committee. We'll have committee members, perhaps two or three, reading the same book, bring their recommendations back to the committee. We'll reduce it to a short list of probably three or four, and then have a substantial discussion within the committee and try to announce our selection by March 1.
After just 2 years, Jolliffe says he feels as though the project has already accomplished its initial goals.
We've had two really good selections. Both of them have been widely read by a wide range of students, faculty, staff members, community members. We've had very good cooperation from the Fayetteville Public Library who have tried to encourage people in their book clubs to read the book. We've had the speakers on campus, or the authors on campus both years to give talks, and both talks were very well received and stimulated a great deal of discussion. So I think the project has achieved what it was set out to do, and that's to stimulate common intellectual conversations in the campus and community.
Book nominations can be emailed to onebook.uark@gmail.com. Still to come on Ozarks at Large, Chad Lorenz, the homepage editor of Slate.com, headlined the inaugural Skill Swap Conference over the weekend. Ozarks at Large's Ithi Ignihotra-Madolkar spoke with him and several of the conference's other speakers and organizers about the future of journalism. Her report is coming up in the second half of Ozarks at Large.
It's Wednesday, January 26, 2011, and when you edit an entertainment tab for a daily newspaper and you put together a daily news magazine on public radio, your schedules don't always align. That's why on the phone with me, and not in person, is Becca Bacon-Martin, editor of What's Up, found in Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
I feel like I've abandoned you, Kyle, but I'll be back on Friday, I promise.
Okay. It's just one of those weeks, as you've said.
It really is. And there are big things going on tomorrow night that I want to give people a heads up about. I know you're aware of this. A big party for, well, it's cable access, community
yes.
access television now. It was Fayetteville Open Channel. It was Access for Fayetteville. It's going to be something new Thursday night.
That's what I understand. I talked to Ann Shelley, who is the current executive director, and she said, yeah, a brand new name that will be unveiled.
And she's brand new, too.
Yeah, starting in July.
There's also a film that will debut Thursday night called The Open Channel, Public Access Television and the People Next Door. It's a graduate project by a filmmaker named Nikita Reed from Memphis, and you'll get to see it. You'll get to meet Ann Shelley. You'll get to find out the new name and the somewhat new mission of CAT Television. And there's a great quote from the filmmaker about, you know, in other cities, community access television is dying, but in Fayetteville, it just refuses to. It just keeps getting stronger. So it should be fun. 7 o'clock party at the Cosmopolitan Hotel, and admission is free.
Becca Bacon-Martin is the editor of What's Up, found in Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
When Daddy told me what happened, I couldn't believe what he had just said.
American singer and songwriter Lucinda Williams was born on this date in 1953. Williams, whose father is the poet Miller Williams, began writing songs after borrowing a guitar at the age of 12. She later studied guitar and then voice, but she never learned to read music. In 1979, having built a solid foundation of live performance, Williams recorded Ramblin' on My Mind, an album of folk, country, and blues standards that was reissued in 1991 as Ramblin'. She recorded only original songs for her next effort, Happy Woman Blues, in 1980. Neither album drew much attention. Her big break came in 1988 with the release of Lucinda Williams. Widely hailed as a classic, it revealed her growing confidence as a songwriter. The emotional intensity of the songs was underscored by Williams' rough-edged singing, which, though lacking in range, resonated with both vulnerability and power. Sweet Old World, a folk-infused collection that included songs of suicide and regret, came out in 1992. That same year, Mary Chapin Carpenter covered Williams' Passionate Kisses, a single from her self-titled album. Carpenter's version earned Williams a Grammy Award for Country Song of the Year. Williams' legendary perfectionism was evident during the recording of her fifth album, Car Wheels on a Gravel Road. Her initial unhappiness with the work led to a number of delays, and it was not released until 1998. The album brought Williams her first real commercial success. Universally acclaimed, Car Wheels on a Gravel Road also won a Grammy for Best Contemporary Folk Album. In 2001, she released the understated Essence. It featured the song Get Right with God, which earned Williams a Grammy for Best Female Rock Vocal. 2003's World Without Tears was her first album to debut in the top 20 of Billboard's Top 200 Albums chart. With the enthusiastic reception in 2007 of the album West, Williams seemed to have finally earned the high level of commercial success that many believe she deserved. Little Honey, also critically acclaimed, was released in 2008. The USS Arkansas, also known as the USS Ozark, one of four Monitor-class naval vessels built for the U.S. Navy in the late 1800s, was finally sold as scrap metal on this date in 1922 after having served various assignments in the North Atlantic and Gulf of Mexico. Launched on November 10th of 1900, the Arkansas had been renamed the Ozark in 1909 and was refitted as a submarine tender in 1913. It sailed into the port of Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, and was decommissioned before its final dismantling and its sale as scrap metal in 1922. India proclaimed itself a republic on this date in 1950. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Antoinette Grajeda. The world's first, and evidently only, Walmart on campus has opened on the University of Arkansas campus in Fayetteville. Jacqueline Froelich takes us there.
In the ground level of the new Garland Avenue parking complex on the U of A campus is a boutique, yogurt shop, campus bookstore, and what looks to be a small grocery store. Above the entrance hangs a baby blue sign with that familiar golden burst. Beneath it, the words Walmart on campus.
Hello. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Just fine.
Can you answer the Walmart gift cards here, too?
The what?
Walmart gift card.
Yeah. We do just about everything a regular Walmart does.
Inside, Daniel Luttrell checks out a queue of students loaded down with books and devices. The 3,000-square-foot building with a 2,100-square-foot sales floor stocks a dozen or so aisles and coolers filled with instant and prepared foods, juice, soda, fresh fruit, candy, and school supplies targeted to a very specific demographic.
Well, my name is Clarity Abin, and I'm checking out the tiniest Walmart in the world, and it's pretty cute. Got a nice selection in such a small space. And they have school supplies, which is nice, convenient. They have the same calculators here as they do in the bookstore.
In the campus bookstore a block south, a 50-pack of CDs are actually a buck less. Scissors cost the same, but most other things do tend to be higher. And Walmart on campus is the opposite of a Sam's Club. Most items are sized for single dormitory and apartment living. 18-year-old pre-med student Kevin Roberts is purchasing pizza and Coke.
And it's really convenient to have this location on campus because, you know, now we don't have to, you know, allot time that we could be using for studying and stuff like that and go to off-campus locations, so.
Walmart on campus stocks lots of drugstore items as well, and Caitlin Parker likes that she can get her medicine here when she gets sick.
Definitely. It's easier than, like, walking all the way to where my car is parked and driving to Walmart to get, like, you know, a prescription or, you know, something really easily. Like, this is really cool that the pharmacy's here.
Now, the Walmart on campus looks like a convenience drugstore. Walmart spokesperson Tiffany Moffitt says the company considers it strictly a pharmacy.
The Walmart pharmacy on the University of Arkansas campus in Fayetteville is one of a kind. It's a custom design that was created to meet the university's needs. No additional pharmacies of this type are planned, nor is it part of a smaller Walmart store that has been discussed.
So this Walmart on campus design, not a prototype, which has been widely reported, but constructed as a courtesy to the university community located in the backyard of Walmart HQ. 7 Walmart employees, along with manager Eric Wright, work here, writes also the pharmacist.
Obviously it's a lot smaller than the neighborhood market, so we tried to get as many products as we could that would help the surrounding community. We tried to tailor towards the students and the faculty and staff, and then we also have the pharmacy that will serve anybody. So,
but unlike a convenience store, that tends to be higher in price, Wright says. His store operates under the Walmart pricing structure, including $4 prescription drugs. He's also fine-tuning inventory preferences as requests for items come in. Free parking, of course, is impossible on campus. But this location offers options, 2 free pharmacy spots out front.
And then the parking garage back here, you can either pay for the metered or after 5 or on weekends, I'm pretty sure it's free.
And just like the supercenters, the world's tiniest Walmart, which is already becoming a novel attraction, is open every day, 8 a.m. to 10 p.m. The pharmacy desk closed on Sundays. Reporting for Ozarks at Large, I'm Jacqueline Froelich.
If you wish to visit the new Walmart on campus and stroll the rest of the Garland Street Center, we confirmed with university authorities that parking is free after 5 p.m. and on weekends, but park only in the metered spaces on levels 1 and 2. Jazz singer Kurt Elling has been named the Downbeat Critics Poll Male Vocalist of the Year for 11 consecutive years, and the Jazz Standout Male Vocalist of Our Time by the New York Times. Join Robert Ginsberg this Friday at 10 p.m. on Shades of Jazz for the first in a two-part interview with Elling in anticipation of his Northwest Arkansas performance at Walton Arts Center on February 5th. That's Shades of Jazz this Friday at 10 p.m. on KUAF Public Radio. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Antoinette Grajeda. Once upon a time, newspaper reporters only wrote stories for their local papers, and broadcast reporters only produced video packages to air on the 10 o'clock news. However, today's journalist needs to be able to multitask. Newspaper reporters now need to be able to shoot video for their website, and TV reporters need to be able to write stories for their website. To address the issues of the ever-changing environment for today's journalists, the Northwest Arkansas chapter of the Society of Professional Journalists hosted a skill swap conference. Ozarks at Large's Ithi Ignihotri-Madolkar attended the convention and has this report.
Question: which of these words is not really a word? All right, loaned, complected? Answer: none of those. Questions such as this, along with ones about good leads for the web, use of various media for beginners, free software and applications for online news reporting and blogging, and online writing were answered during the first Skill Swap conference held last Saturday at the Walter J. Lemke Department of Journalism at the University of Arkansas. The conference was sponsored by the Department of Journalism and the Northwest Arkansas and University chapters of the Society of Professional Journalists. Catherine Schultz, a journalism instructor at the UFA, says the workshop is organized for professionals from media and other fields who often find themselves unprepared for skills traditionally not a part of their job requirements.
We started the Skill Swap when we found out that there were journalists on the print side who were now having to learn to do audio and video to put on their web, as well as people on the broadcast side who are now having to write stories in print form to put on their website. So our original intention was to serve journalists. However, we found that who really showed up for the workshop are not necessarily traditional journalists, although we have a few, but mostly just people who are interested in communicating online.
Catherine, also known as Militant Grammarian on Ozarks at Large, led a session called Grammar You Thought You Knew But Didn't. She says the challenging task of preparing journalism students for a future in media is daunting.
What really we have to give to students is the same old basics. If you know what a good story is, if you know how to tell a good story, if you know how to draw a reader into your story or a listener into your story, then those are the things that we know that we can impart to them. The technological part, to be honest, a lot of them come knowing that, and they teach us. But we do have classes that train students in audio and photography and video, the things that they'll need. We also bring in guest speakers who talk about social media and other kinds of technology that people are going to need in the future. But as for the future of journalism, who knows?
Catherine says it is important to focus on the quality of journalism rather than on the nature of the medium. The lack of former has resulted in the ambiguity between real journalism and opinions.
It's so important for us to make that shift in our minds, because for the last 20 years at least, journalism, the word journalism, has gotten so muddled. People don't know what journalism is. They say Entertainment Tonight, that's journalism. No, that's entertainment. And we need to hold that line on trying to educate people. The difference between a talking head on Fox News or CNN or wherever, those are opinions. And that's not what we're in the workforce to do. We are there to do the best we can to report accurately and all sides of the story. I'm not saying all journalists are objective, but to strive for objectivity is important.
Christopher Spencer, writer and publisher of OzarksUnbound.com and a contributor to Ozarks at Large, introduced the workshop participants to free software and applications that can be used to set up online blogs and news websites. He thinks the distinction between a news journalist and a news blogger may be somewhat artificial in current times.
I think that a journalist now, particularly a young journalist coming up, needs to have the basic HTML skills, which means you need to know how to put a link, you know, in a word that you've written online. And also, I think we're starting to see more individual reporter as brand. And why I say that, when you think about your career, it's going to be less about your affiliation with a particular media company and more about your career on the whole, becoming more and more developed, establishing maybe even your own audience. And things like a Facebook and Twitter, social media, allow you to start to cultivate your own audience. And you would be then bringing that to the game whenever you go to a newspaper.
Participants of the workshop included journalists and individuals who wish to communicate effectively online. Camilla Meadows, Director of Communications for the University's College of Engineering, thinks SkillSwap is an opportunity to stay updated on the latest means of online communication. She also learned something unexpected.
Okay, well, I learned in the grammar section that you can't say, hopefully it won't snow. That blew me away. I thought I knew all about grammar, and I didn't know that.
Along with Catherine Schultz and Christopher Spencer, the Saturday workshop's speakers included Marcy Manley, a local TV news reporter, Robin Starling Ledbetter, an instructor, and Brett Schulte, an assistant professor in the journalism department. The list also included SkillSwap's featured speaker Chad Lorenz, homepage editor of one of the first online magazines, Slate.com. Chad, a first-time visitor to Northwest Arkansas, lend an insight into the job of Slate.com's homepage editor.
I'm responsible for the headlines and the images that we put on the homepage to promote all of our content. And it's something where we're trying to increase the pace of that to be of more at an internet speed. So it involves making decisions about what articles should get the biggest play and which ones should get smaller play, or which ones should, you know, don't need to get promotion at all. So that's a big part of my job. And I also do some copy editing. I adjudicate factual errors and make decisions about whether we need to run corrections on stories. Those are sort of other aspects of my job that are not related to the homepage.
According to Chad, Slate was one of the original online magazines started in 1996 by Microsoft. Another major contribution from Slate was the collection of the front pages of the nation's newspapers. On the job, Chad abides by three principles learned in journalism school. The first is to check everything and assume nothing. The second is to write in a way that resonates with the reader. And the third, stick to the deadline. From a journalist's perspective, he admires many fellow journalists and writers at Slate.
Jack Schaefer's writing, I'm interested in the media anyway because I'm a member of it, so Jack Schaefer's writing on the media is, of course, always fascinating to me. John Dickerson writes about politics in a way that I think is so fresh and refreshing, and so the opposite of hysterical commentary that goes on a lot of other political websites and on television. Will Salatan can lay out an argument with the sharpness of a razor blade. He just makes things so crystal clear and clearly defines the sides of a battle. So those are three that come to mind. Tim Noah is relentless in pursuing journalistic topics, whatever it is, and is able to write about almost any topic that's in the news and has an opinion about any topic in the news. So those are a few of my favorites, but you know, everybody at Slate does a hell of a job, and I could read an article by any of them.
SkillSwap's featured speaker Chad Lorenz discussed online writing for a widely read web publication and issues such as ombudsmanship and transparency. Since SkillSwap focused on introducing and training veteran journalists and beginners in audio and video production and online writing, a question comes to mind. Is the focus on backpack journalism or multitasking affecting the quality of work? Brett Schulte, assistant professor in the Department of Journalism, has the answer.
Well, I think that there's no doubt that when you have more to do and there are more distractions, then the quality of work is going to suffer. And I can say that this upcoming generation of reporters has an incredible work ethic, and that everyone should be holding up their heads proudly with what they accomplish, with all the tools they have to use, and with all the demands set upon them. There was a day decades ago, or even a decade ago, where reporters had some pretty cushy jobs, and those days are gone. Yes, I think that work can suffer, but I also think that reporters are an incredibly resilient and energetic and talented bunch. It is not for the weak of will or faint of heart, and reporters do a wonderful job of getting out a lot of stories very quickly and with a great deal of accuracy.
The first SkillSwap conference was sponsored by the University of Arkansas's Walter Chilimke Department of Journalism and the Northwest Arkansas and University chapters of the Society of Professional Journalists. More information on the society is available on nwaspj.com. For Ozarks at Large, this is Iti Agnihotri Mutholkar.
Local support for Ozarks at Large comes from the Center for Arkansas and Regional Studies at the University of Arkansas in Fayetteville, dedicated to the celebration and documentation of this region's history and culture. iPhone users can now receive all three KUAF signals, KUAF-FM, KUAF-2, our all-classical station, and KUAF-3, featuring news talk programming through their iPhones with the KUAF app. Some features include an alarm clock sleep timer, go to sleep and wake up to KUAF, and on-demand Ozarks at Large programs. Just go to the iPhone App Store and search KUAF. For more information on the KUAF iPhone app, go to KUAF.com. The Fort Smith Symphony will present The Sounds of New Orleans, a tribute to Louis Armstrong, this Saturday at 7:30 p.m. at the Arkansas Best Performing Arts Center in downtown Fort Smith. This performance will include jazz favorites, plus overtures from both Rossini and Weber. For tickets or more information, 479-452-7575. This is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Rogers, Fort Smith, Y-City, a listener-supported service of the Department of Journalism and Fulbright College of Arts and Sciences at the University of Arkansas. Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF. I'm Antoinette Grajeda. Thanks so much for listening. Tune in tomorrow at noon for an all-new edition of Ozarks at Large. Have a great day.